Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Zickel, the stories-based podcast that interviews professionals, donors, and thought leaders in the field of fundraising.
This episode is sponsored by BWF. BWF is a full-service philanthropic consulting services firm. BWF serves large and medium-sized nonprofits in the areas of campaign management, high net worth fundraising, organizational consulting, data science, digital marketing, and technology. Clients include universities, health systems, arts and culture organizations, and NGOs throughout North America, Europe, Australia, and the Pacific Rim. As a truly comprehensive fundraising consulting firm, BWF has a team of consultants with expertise in every facet of philanthropy. For more information, please visit bwf.com. This is part 5 and the final episode of the Returning to a Sense of Place miniseries. While we'll continue to discuss the topic of working from the office and from home in its various forms throughout the next season and year, our study with BWF and our special guests who participated will be coming to a close with this episode. Since July, we've been asking the questions about what is working and what isn't, for who and how, and really trying to understand this issue from all angles and all degrees. Today, Josh Burkholz, CEO of BWF, and I wrap up what we've learned over the past several months and what we want to take as we continue to move forward. Now let's get started. Josh, great to see you.
Well, it's great to see you, Catherine. Thanks for having me back.
So I was just telling you, but I am sitting in the podcast studio of my new employer, which is thrilling for me.
That is awesome. Big time. You deserve it.
Yeah. So I haven't talked about this too much, but I made a move a couple of weeks ago from higher ed to independent schools. And it's been a really big transition, but also exciting. And one of the perks is a ninth floor soundproof practice room that has podcast equipment.
That is so cool. Is it in regular use? Or are you going to have exclusive access to the studio?
I'm working on that now. I think that they are hoping that students will be using the space for projects, you know, maybe, awesome. You know, probably more for the high school students, you know, senior projects and things like that. But I'm hoping that I can get involved and help where needed. So more to come on that.
I think that'll just add to the sense of place, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So funny that you say that, because I do want to talk a little bit about part of what my transition has been so big is I was full-time remote and now I'm full-time in person.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. But before we do, you know, okay. You and I last talked in June. Mm-hmm. And I want to start with talking about how things have changed for you over the summer and into the fall with your work and your team.
Yeah, it's a good question. Like this is sort of an up and down for everybody, isn't it? We were opening up, we were hybrid 2-3 days a week, and we sort of went the other way. And we've got this, it's kind of like the good and the disruptive at the same time. Like it's interesting in the space and for our firm, we're the busiest we've ever been. We're the biggest we've ever been. The sector has momentum, people are raising money again, but there's still so much disruption. And like for a company like ours, our team has always been somewhat remote, even though we have a Minneapolis headquarters, we have consultants that have been in different places. But with those different places, I think of just the regional distribution of the people that were on this series, there's a different experience in different parts of the country. And the same is true within our team as a company, that we've got some in places where it's wide open and others where they're still at home. They've not left their homes at all. And just trying to navigate that, some of our clients requiring all of their partners to be vaccinated, others not, and all of the dialogue around that. So at our headquarters, indeed, we did reverse. We're back to mostly at home right now because it's been surging in the Minneapolis area with the Delta variant. And we want to be not only keep our people safe, but also be good citizens and set an example. So we, I have to admit, I still come in most of the time, and that's mainly Wi-Fi battles with my kids in college and so forth, that I can have a dedicated signal. But it's kind of a big empty space around me. Yeah, I think that's, I think that's where we're at. And hopefully it goes, you know, honestly, it's kind of been tough. I was excited about seeing people again. And I think actually re-disruption was more disruptive to me than disruption. And maybe I don't have good enough memories for back how rough it was in March, April, but I was like, so ready. And then the setback, well, we're moving forward. It's exciting nonetheless that at least the sector is really moving forward.
Yes. I mean, I've been on LinkedIn and seeing these last couple of days, several nine-figure gifts announced, which were really exciting. Totally. We know those have probably been in the works for a year or at least.
Yeah. I love when Kelly talked about closing a gift over text message. I'm like, I would have had this conversation. But you're right. Big gifts are happening, which means that the disruption is not disrupting generosity. Generosity has the power to go way beyond temporary setbacks such as this.
Yeah. So just to go back to, you know, you're in such a unique position with working with several institutions that have different policies, because I think so many of us have been guided by our organization or institution's policy. Are you finding that, you know, without using names or specific examples, that there are equity issues around those who are able to go in versus those who aren't? And is that impacting people's ability to succeed as wanted or as needed?
It's a good question. I don't know that I've had that direct of a conversation, but I do hear frustration in terms of some, and you see in certain sectors like healthcare. We're working at a healthcare organization, so we're subject to perhaps stricter rules and policies. And even though I'm not a healthcare worker, I'm a fundraiser, I'm having to follow these healthcare protocols. But we heard really, I think, positive construction from the guests that joined us in the series around how they were still able to interact with donors and even have some visits and a little bit of opening up and so forth. I mean, it seems to be a role situation on one hand, and then a sector, like which sector of nonprofit does this person work in? And then the experience, and then you add to that the region of the country they're in. So we're in a healthcare organization that's very strict, but we happen to be in a region where it's very open. My guess is that person's having more conflict in their development than perhaps someone where they're more aligned in terms of region and the organization.
Yeah, so we did hear some great examples of effective work. Kelly's text message gifts, which I loved hearing that from her. And, you know, Kareem had an in-person meeting at the end of the summer that went really well. And, you know, Willie is hiring up a whole new team, and that's exciting as well. What were other highlights for you, either at BWF or from the episodes that you want to share with us?
So I was thinking about the episodes and then the conversations I've had with other people, you know, kind of what their response was, because I'm curious, you know, we're really excited about this and I want to know what other people have been saying. And it's been a lot of, first of all, the response has been very much validation. Like, we love that you're documenting the conversations we all have. It's like there's a historic value to these conversations, which I think is super cool. But for me personally, in terms of surprising in these conversations, both about this and in the conversations within the podcast, was how selfless our profession really is.
Yeah.
A strange thing to say, but there was very few things about how this is affecting me. I mean, we heard—
You're so right.
Yeah, Willie's like, I'm listening to my team. I'm in this full listening mode. I mean, Allison, I'm focused on how I can trust my team that they're going to do these things. I mean, Kelly's like, we should let the donors decide. Or Kareem, I mean, we're MD Anderson no matter where we work, like a selflessness around the organization. And we kept hearing this. And I thought, okay, that's the first one. We want to sound good, our first conversation. But then we go to the next conversation and there's more selflessness. I mean,
yeah, it didn't stop.
I know Willie's like, you know, the positivity celebrating the donors. I want to see his ballet and I want to see him dance. Like, awesome. We need a quick snapshot, maybe on a website of Willie's dance for everybody.
May have to put that on the Instagram. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Or, you know, Allison talking about, I mean, she went into a more empathy on the leaders also being remote. And again, another example of selflessness. And with Kareem's visit is stretching that fundraising muscle for the benefit of the donor. I think Kelly talked about having the board members wanted to meet, couldn't do it at the hospital. Let's find a path to make them happy. And none of this was, what am I comfortable with as a person? What are my needs? It was what's, and maybe that's what makes a great fundraiser, is we care so deeply for the missions we're in. We're willing to find our sense of place in the joy that development gives to other people.
I was thinking the same thing as I was recording. When they started saying these things about their institutions, I was like, oh, you know, they're just being nice. They're introducing the ethos. But no, I agree with you that that was authentic and went through every episode. And it makes me wonder if, and we don't know this, but it makes me wonder if that is unique to fundraising because it is so mission driven.
Yeah.
Or if corporate employees would have similar views. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a really good question. And I mean, I'm in a corporation, but it's a corporation that serves the nonprofit sector. So yeah. I'm not sure that I have an unbiased view of that. But we talked a little bit about sort of character and leadership in kind of the opening episode. And I think that there's a really strong evidence that empathetic leadership makes you a good leader no matter the sector. And then our studies on donors that we've done, and certainly others have done, on how important that authenticity is, and that mm-hmm. concept of, do I believe this fundraiser would give the same gift if they have my money? I think that true belief in mission, maybe it's prevalent, maybe it's not, but it's definitely prevalent of those that are good at this profession. To be a great fundraiser is to care deeply, really have a deep empathy for the donors themselves, and finding a path for them to do the best thing they ever did in their life. So is that the truth in the corporate sense? I can see a great salesperson believing that their product changes someone's life. That's probably the best salesperson. The person that's just a job, probably not so much. So maybe we just got lucky and we got the cream of the crop in this conversation.
Yeah. So did anyone change your mind? Did any of your views change as you were listening?
Well, I'm not sure that the conversation, like all of it, I was like head nodding on both sides. Like, weird about this. Oh yeah, I agree. And then the other side, oh yeah, I agree. And I know going into this, I was like 55, 45 preferring remote. I've kind of flip-flopped. I'm actually probably more preferring in person now. It's not a strong preference, but I think for me is like, I did miss people. I know it's cliched. I love the water cooler conversations. And honestly, there's only so much slack a person can deal with in life. And I think I've hit my slack limit.
You mean the app?
The app, yes.
For those who don't know.
the Slack app, which is supposed to replace those quick chats and stuff. And I do my quick chats and I'm trying to be a good Slack user. But nothing's as good as just hanging out over coffee and just asking some quick questions and connecting about. I'm not going to Slack someone about, you know, what they did this weekend. Maybe I would, maybe I should, maybe that would make it better. I don't know. But I think when people were here and then they went away again, it felt like someone took away my birthday gift or something.
Yeah, it was really sad when we had to revert.
Yeah. Well,
I had to think for a second about what that the name even was, because it's just,
well, for you, I mean, sorry to switch and me be the one asking the questions, but how's it changed for you? I mean, not only have you heard all this different perspective, you're in a different situation. How has that changed your perspective?
Yeah, it's been so interesting. I mean, I was honest in saying that I prefer in person. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was weighing when I was thinking about my move was that I knew that Chapin was going to be in person full time.
Yeah.
And one of their slogans or their mottos that they live by is under one roof, because the school is all in one building.
Wow.
And that's very rare, I guess. A lot of these other schools might have a couple other spaces close by or a very small mm-hmm. campus. And that resonated with me. And maybe it was because I was just missing being in person, but I think there's something really powerful about that slogan and what that means.
What did they do last year? Under one roof in exile? Or
well, they did have students in the building.
Okay.
And apparently the advancement suite was a second grade classroom.
Fantastic.
So the advancement office was not in person because of course the students come first. And so I started the same week that the advancement team was coming back for the first time after a very extended mm-hmm. period of time. So that was an interesting way to onboard
Yeah, it's got to be different at an independent school too. I have a daughter who's at a independent school. My older two are in college, and honestly, it was harder for me not so much to work from home last year, but to not go see her orchestra concert or to go and like some of these things that, you know, part of being a parent is living through those experiences you see your child have, and perhaps the schools have a different. It's not just employees that are disrupted, but it's the family, the ecosystem around these students, not just the student themselves too. Like there's all these different factors weighing in. And I know you've got the whole stage from sounds like K to senior in high school.
Yeah,
that happens. Like that is how we're becoming a person, and the connections that we're forging and all those things. Oh man, it must have been tough to be a student this last year.
Oh, I know. I don't envy them at all. But we have these little post-it notes that the students wrote on, and one student wrote in all caps, "Everything." You know, what's great about being back together? Everything.
Oh, cool. So, congrats! That sounds so awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't expecting to end this series with such a big change for me, for myself personally.
I think it's absolutely appropriate. Your sense of this changed.
It did. It totally did.
And I don't know if you returned to one, but you found a new one.
And to that point, you know, I had a Zoom going away and someone asked me, you know, what are you going to miss the most? And of course I said my colleagues, but they said, you know, what specifically about Columbia? And I said, walking through the heart of campus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I can walk by it again. It hasn't gone anywhere, but that is so weighty and powerful.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Especially with institutions that have been around long before us and will be after us. And to know what we did had a transformational influence on them. And it might seem small, but development is really the front lines of transformation for so many organizations. I mean, you can go back to all these schools, the ones that are the most successful were fundraising long before everybody else. There were people that were stepping up and giving money to make it a great organization. And I sometimes like to think of our profession as like we are school teachers, except we're teaching the 101 on how to, on giving. Like we're teaching people how to give. And I think that's a pretty noble profession. We might not be the $100 million philanthropists ourselves, or the generous, I mean, we can be generous, certainly all of us can. We can give a generous tip to a server and so forth. And there's a broad way that we can be generous. But to see what people in our profession have in terms of an impact, and then when you see it like that, that's when it's really palpable. You're walking through a campus, you're seeing students, you're seeing these buildings. They don't know who you are, but you know that you made their life a little bit better. And I think there's some joy in that for sure.
I love that quote. You said development is at the forefront of transformation.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely is. I that's why I love advancement. We're really advancing institutions. And maybe all these words, they just become titles and they sort of drift into the background, but I think it's powerful stuff. I'm still as excited as I ever was around this profession. It's super cool. Yeah.
Yes. And your point about educating is so well taken. I always think of myself as I'm sharing the options that people have that they can consider. Yeah. You know, that's my job. If I don't tell them what they can accomplish, they're not going to know.
Right. Yeah, it's so true. And I always like to think about after the big gift is made or whatever the big gift for that person is, the thing that for them was really special. They look back and from so many people, it was the best thing they ever did in their life. You hear stories like that all the time. And for me, that fuels the beginning of a relationship. When I'm thinking about a cultivation strategy, organizing, aligning priorities and all this stuff, teaching them, advising how they could structure and all these things, I know what I'm helping them do is something that they're going to be so proud of. I think there's still like in sales, there's always these stories, the slick car salesperson. There's also the stories about fundraisers, you know, just trying to get money out of people. But I think those stories come from people that don't see the front lines of development and how special it really is. I love it. I'll stop on that. I'm going to eat up all of your time, all of your episodes, just on how cool it is that we get to do this every day.
We can't be reminded enough. And I think especially people who are listening who are maybe a little bit lost and confused going into the fall, depending on what situation they're in, hearing what you just said is going to get them excited and help them to realize that this is a long game that we're all playing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it is. Oh, and that's why I love these conversations. I mean, that selflessness that I talked about, it's fascinating because you always say it's better to give than to receive. So we're in the position of asking, but even us in asking, we're basically giving our own, dare I say, safety, our own comfort to make other people more comfortable, to have our team be more comfortable, to have that come through. I don't know, maybe we're in the professional empathy game. I don't know.
That's really interesting. That might be something that we should explore. Maybe that's our next project, Josh.
Maybe. Empathy. I'd love to do another project with you. That'd be so much
fun. There's definitely research out there on this, and maybe we should, look further into that.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Are there any other things that you want our listeners to take away from this series overall, or advice that you want to leave people with as we close out?
Well, I think for me, I wanted to go in with an open mind because something I said in the first one is it's a dilemma because both sides have right. I mean, both are right.
Yes.
And when I say both sides, even that is wrong. Like it's this whole continuum of preference. And there's so much polarization happening. But I think the reality is we're seeing all these sides. And I heard people from a very open, like a fully back to the office, people fully remote, their concerns, all their different thoughts, and they all had value to it. And I think that's what's really helpful to us is to hear both sides, hear all the sides, and really try to see where that perspective is. Because honestly, this reminds me of high school debate where you're given the topic and which side you're supposed to debate.
Absolutely.
I think I could debate both sides on this one. Like I totally do. Everyone is right. That's why this is so hard. So that's, I don't know if that's a takeaway, but maybe that helps lead us in our conversations with others that might disagree with us, that to see their perspective. And maybe we can find some common ground there.
Yes. The two sides is a takeaway. I've been thinking about this and I'm seeing more and more value to the remote argument. Mm-hmm. I also think something that has come to me, this is not new or shocking, but we really are driven by the institution that we work for.
Yeah.
And that within whatever policy that institution set, that was your framework.
Yep, that's right.
So I'm thinking we really need to be more and more clear about what type of institution we're working for.
It's true. People are reevaluating. So they're with organizations. They're looking at their own life circumstances and they're making important choices, I think, right now. I think that's happening everywhere, from leadership down to the entry-level positions, those choices, it's kind of fascinating right now. I know that Pew predicted that we'd have double the number of baby boom retirements in 2020, and that was before the pandemic happened, and it was more than double. They were absolutely correct. There's more than double the rate of retirement that year from the year before, but also stories of Gen X and other generations, millennials, just doing career pivots. I want to do something different. My life is disrupted. Why don't I just full on disrupt and do what I want to do rather than what I've had to do? And so there's a lot of discussions happening right now. Like, is this the right thing? Is this how I'm going to make a difference in the world? And are there other ways that I can do that, that fit my personality and help me find, dare I say, a better sense of place?
I don't want to say anything after that because I feel like that was the perfect ending. I didn't mean... But it's so true. I think our decisions, our careers have been forced to become more personal because of the pandemic and because of these factors. And so hopefully what that's going to mean is that people are having better fits with where they work and hopefully a closer alignment of their values.
It's true. I mean, the one thing that I heard described to me, mainly around the sort of the racial reckoning of this last year, and maybe being in Minneapolis, I would have had a different perspective on a lot of those conversations. But also with this pandemic, what we've had is a blurring between home and the workplace, but more than just where we're working, also the conversations. Like, the workplace used to not be where you talked about your life and your life goals as much. Maybe for some it was, but that was home with my friends and family. But when we saw full disruption, the workplace was our one place where we are still connecting with people. Now, it might have been through Zoom, but we still needed that human connection. So important questions on diversity and equity, important questions about life and impact and work and politics and all these things went into a workplace in a way like we've never seen that before. And I think that's also, I mean, we talk about just the disruption in our work, but also how we have brought home into work has changed quite a bit in the American workplace, and I assume globally.
Yeah, I'm going to look to you, Josh, to tell me some new data that's come out on this and, you know, how
I will track it and I'll send you a note. Or better yet, jump on a call or meet in person at some point.
Yes. Do you think you'll be making it to New York City? And
I will make it to New York City if New York City will have me. I want to see your new podcast studios.
Yeah, I'll have to bring you in person. Oh, that sounds great. Thank you so much for doing this series with The Debrief, and more to come.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate what you did, Catherine, in bringing this all together. Really, it was your brainchild and to a great success. And special thanks to Willie, Allison, Kelly, and Kareem. Love you guys. Thanks for doing this.
They were awesome. Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
This is not just the end of the series. It is also the end of season 4. I will be taking some time to continue to acclimate in my new role and begin working on a dynamic season 5. I've already secured some very strong and exciting guests and can't wait to share what is in store later this fall. A special thank you goes to BWF, Willie Jude, Allison Baker, Josh Burkholz, Kelly Morris, and Kareem Kafray for their contributions to this project. Please connect on Instagram at devdebrief for updates on the new season, more information on guests, book recommendations, future episodes, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great week.